Welcome to the Why Isn't It Working? Business and Tech Podcast, talking all things business and tech in the emerging and enterprise space. Here are your hosts, Carl Wood and Michael Hamilton.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. Today we have with us Ryan Yackel. He's Vice President of Marketing at Keyfactor. How are you today, Ryan?
I'm great. How are you?
Oh, awesome, mate. Awesome. And as always, Mr. Carl Wood is with me. How are you, Carl?
Yeah, great. Thanks, Michael. Thanks for the introduction.
Beautiful. Oh, well, let's kick off the first question, Carl.
Absolutely. So, Ryan, thank you very much for joining us. We know the time zone has obviously given us a bit of drama in the past. However, Can you give us a bit of a background on, you know, how you fell into the product marketing role and what your current role is like at the moment with Keyfactor?
So I do product marketing at Keyfactor, and actually, hold on 1 second. We may have to start this again. Here's my daughter. She just popped in here. Hello. How are you doing? She's supposed to be taking a bath right now, but she's here. I mean, we can keep this going, I guess. That's fine. So what's interesting is a key factor is that how I got, and a lot of people ask me like how I got into like product marketing roles and how I got to kind of where I'm at. It actually started probably, I guess, like 4 years ago. Hey, Rosie. 4 years ago when I actually joined a company called QA Symphony. So at QA Symphony, and you guys know what QA Symphony is because Tricentis and QA Symphony merged together for one of the best software testing companies out there, probably the best software testing company out there, if we have to say so ourselves. But I joined back in like 2014, and I was a sales engineer. And I always tell people like how I got into product marketing. What's cool about sales engineering is the fact that you're basically doing sales and talking about the product and doing product positioning and messaging and giving value props. You're doing all of that, right? I mean, you guys do that probably every day, right? I mean, you're constantly talking about the value of the company, the value of the product, all of that, right? But also you're doing demos and you have to be technical, right? You have to understand the customer's insights and how they do stuff. And, you know, you can't just BS your way through that, right? You have to actually know what you're doing. And so when I started to, this is a quarantine, this is the typical, typical thing of quarantine. When I started to do that, I started working with the marketing team and building out the website and building out collateral and data sheets and white papers and all kinds of stuff. So I did all that. As I was doing all that stuff, they said, hey, do you want to actually move into more of a product marketing role? So all the stuff that I was doing from sales engineering and marketing, I kind of easily, you know, transitions myself into product marketing. And so from there, I was global director at Tricentis. And then at Keyfactor, I made the switch last March over into the security space to do product marketing there. So I do all the content, all competitive positioning. Basically anything to do with content, I do. There's what's cool about product marketing is it's multifaceted, right? I'll be working with the customer success team in an upsell campaign one day. Then I'll be working on a new product launch, you know, in a couple of weeks when we're going through a new website refresh, weeks after that. So it's constantly changing of what I do. But the cool thing about product marketing and where I kind of fit in is it's an intersection basically between the product team and sales. And so it's all about making that alignment and then having all that alignment internally so that you can make sure that everything that's coming in externally with demand gen, that's also kind of all coming together in one nucleus of a company. So that's what I do.
So obviously product marketing has been around for a while. And like, you know, if you go into a bar, you see a lot of cool sort of, you know, the old school, advertising and like, you know, the billboards and those sort of things as well. IT is a relatively, you know, I guess a new industry, you know, from the time of inception through to now. So is there anything that's being done a bit differently in your experience, you know, within the IT sector compared to maybe, you know, the retail sector?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, everything, you know, there's a term that's out there that basically encapsulates what I do and what all my team does. And I have a huge team, I have a great team. I don't have a huge team, but we have an awesome team. Does a lot of stuff, I guess. We do a lot of work. We do huge stuff, but we don't, there's not a lot of us there. The main thing that you would classify that is like digital marketing. So, you know, when I talked to, you know, I came, you know, when I graduated, from university back in 2010, we didn't have the concept of digital marketing. it was all the traditional retail type marketing, product marketing that you would think of, where it's you're trying to market an asset like a, you know, like a hat or something, or a food or whatever, right? You know, even like, you know, services industry, like food and beverage, things like that, right? So I didn't really have apparel, right? We talked about Nike a lot in ideas. We didn't talk about how to actually, you know, scale a software as a service company with digital marketing. So, you know, number one thing is the website, like building an engaging website so that when people come to you, they know exactly what you offer, and you're very clear in your approach of what you offer to the end user. We didn't have things like email marketing, which is you develop nurture campaigns or nurtures a part of any type of content that you consume. So there's like a whole process that we do when somebody gets to our website and we say, okay, you download a piece of content. Well, then how do we engage with you throughout the buyer's journey so that you're more aware of Key Factor, you're more aware of what we do. And eventually you start to realize, okay, maybe I actually want this type of solution. When I actually get to a point where I'm ready to buy. So, you know, digital marketing is a ton of stuff, but you know, it's email, it's paid search, it's paid ads, it's SEO, which is search engine optimization, it's website, it's all these things kind of put together. And you can put it on steroids even by using like account-based marketing tools. So being able to figure out what the buyer intent is when somebody comes to your website, you can actually figure that out with a lot of tools that are out there. You can figure out if they're surging on certain search terms that are out there and go, oh, they look like they're in a buying pattern. Let's go and reach out to them based off of that. So there's so much that I could talk about, but like, that's like, in general, that's the main stuff. It's, you know, your website is the main, that main banner, that main thing. You walk into a bar and see something, the website is that. So how do you get more and more people aware to come to your website, to be aware of you, who you are? And that's, you know, starts all the way from the top of funnel all the way to the bottom of figuring out how to get people in that.
That's awesome. And look, I know a lot of discussion now around thought leadership within marketing, right? Getting that access to that level. Do you feel that every company should be looking at thought leadership, or especially with Key Factor, because you're a specialization with security? Do you find that that's one of your key factors or key focuses for the business?
I liked how you said key factors.
I know, I said that with the
name in there. Yeah, I mean, thought leadership is just another piece of content that you would do, right? So, and thought leadership can be really simple. It doesn't have to be super. You know, you don't have to go and buy a bunch of, you know, crazy industry report or pay, you know, an analyst firm to write all this content for you to be a thought leader. I mean, that's one thing you could do. We've done that in the past, and those are good ways. But the other way to do it is just to be original and be authentic about the way you're going about your thought leadership. So back in at Tricentis, I did this a lot where, I was on the road a lot, going to road shows and speaking in front of people and just bringing up topics that were on their minds. That I didn't have to be the quintessential expert to be a thought leader. Or I don't like saying I wasn't a thought leader. I'm just saying, to do thought leadership, you don't need to have all these crazy credentials. I think people think that way, but they don't have to. So I mean, a lot of things we did at Tricentis and at Key Factor, what we do here is, you know, we'll take a video that we've done on a webinar. We'll take it, we'll transcribe it super fast. There's actually a really cool way to do that. We actually use so-called Rev, which is basically audio. I think I've told you guys about this, but it's like you basically pump your MP4 through the service and it spits out, you know, all the stuff that you've said. And so what's great about that is that could be thought leadership content. You could have said something that was really cool and you wouldn't even know about it. So you take that transcript and it becomes an ebook, it becomes a white paper, it becomes a blog series, right? All that stuff. It's super easy to reuse that content. The other thing is doing videos, you know, 10-minute plus videos where you're standing in front of a whiteboard and just discussing things. Big thing for me is like, never take for granted that people already know what you think they know. Because there's so many times when I've talked to people where I thought they definitely know that. I don't know why I'm even talking about this. And they're like, oh, I didn't. The way they're asking questions back to me was, oh gosh, I assume you just knew all this, and really I'm giving you information. So it's a great way for that give and take. So yeah, thought leadership is huge. I mean, but it's always a top of funnel piece when you're talking about marketing, because it's content that people are searching on. They're trying to understand like what something is. For our industry, there's a lot of conversation around the term zero trust. Like that's a huge word, kind of like digital transformation in the security space. Like zero trust is like this term people are using over and over again. And we have a different take on what zero trust is in our space. We just did a whole white paper on zero trust manufacturing and how that's a different take on what zero trust networking is, and more on the enterprise security side. So it's just, you know, you can, there's so much you can do. And I would just say, don't worry about trying to, you know, think that it's good enough, just do it. And people will consume it and it's great.
So be engaging and consistent basically with your content, and then make sure to get it out there. Because look, the biggest thing about technical products, what I see a lot of since I've been working in the workforce, is basically you've got the technical product and the technical messaging with the product to go and communicate to the market, when a lot of focus sometimes gets missed on the business outcome of the technology, right? How do you go about, you know, splitting those two up, or do you blend them together, or what sort of strategy do you go through, especially with Keyfactor?
Yeah, I mean, it's cool as what you just asked me was what we just did, which is our new company messaging that we rolled out for sales kickoff. And what we did when I got here, you know, we had a campaign, or we had a 2020 message that I didn't think really do much for Keyfactor. It was not something that was super original, or even if it was original, it didn't hit, right? I mean, you could think of something that's really cool, or you think it's really cool, but your buyer or your customer is like, what do you even mean by this? Like, I don't even, like, what are you talking about? This thing that you're talking about? Like, if you don't speak their language, they're going to be like, if you're trying to, side note, that's one of the problems that people have with creating a category. You hear that a lot. Like, oh, we got to create a category, and we create this category, and we're going to own the category. And it's, and for me, it's like, okay, yeah, you could do that. And we've done that. Like, I think at Tricensis, we did that. We did very well with continuous testing when I was there, right? But other times, like when we get into a space, if the category is already there, don't beat your head against the wall and try to change it, right? That term, that word is already on the minds of the consumer. So don't waste all this time trying to figure out that, right? So I'm a big proponent of, like, if there's a category to be made, fine, do it. But if it's not, you're doing yourself a disservice, because you're just going to do all this work and be all clever and whatever, and you realize that nobody even cares what you're saying. They care about that word over here. They care about this category over here, right? So back to what you're saying about messaging and positioning, I mean, that's a huge responsibility that my team has. Me and Ryan Sanders, another Ryan at the company, actually, we own the company message. So we own training sales. We own, like, I gave the corporate messaging to the entire company 2 weeks ago. And so what went into that was we went through, and I actually hired an external consultant to help me, because I didn't want to have an echo chamber. That's like a big thing that people get into problems with, is like they'll start to think about messaging and positioning and business outcomes and technical features and all this stuff, right? And they'll do it, and then they'll go and they'll talk to the sales rep. They'll go talk to the CTO, the CIO, if you're a smaller company, right? They'll go talk to the customer success. And it's like, oh, okay, let's all get this one happy family and figure it out and get validation that this is what we want to do, right? Well, if you only do that to your internal company, all you'll hear a lot of times are either small tweaks, or they'll say, oh, this is big, this looks great, this is awesome, right? Well, it may not be. And so I hired an external consultant just to work with me on constructing a whole sales narrative, that's where we got into the business outcomes and features and everything. Create a whole skeleton of a sales narrative that talked through, you know, what's the situation that they're in before, what's the new bliss that they're trying to get to, what are those outcomes? And it was a whole process that we went through. We built this sales narrative for enterprise and IoT for the sales reps that was basically the skeleton for our company. And then from there, I took that and I boiled it down to 7 slides that was, hey, this is where Keyfactor fits in to the challenges and pain points you're having. And so, you know, getting back to what you were saying, I mean, the business outcomes and all that, that was a whole process we went through. And like you're saying, you always want to make sure that the business outcomes are said up front before tucked away at the very end, right? There's our consultant that we use, you know, he'd say, like, nobody cares about your product. Like, nobody cares. Like, you could have the coolest looking product in the world. Nobody cares. Like nobody cares at all. And what's interesting is there's a, I gave an example of this in our sales presentation. I said, I went back, this is some old data, but it still, it makes a point. So back in 2010, there was a research firm, I think 2010, it was a research firm that analyzed 103 million hands of virtual poker. Okay. And then it said, you know, 75% of the time it didn't go to a showdown, meaning you get to, but you flip your cards over and you figure out who wins. Right. And then it showed that only 12% of the time did the person who had the actual winning cards actually won. So that means that 88% of the time, the person who won, either through bluffing or through playing the table or raise whatever it was, right, making the person fold, whatever, 88% of the time, that person won, which goes to show you that even if you had the best hand in the world, right, it doesn't guarantee you that you're going to win the hand, you know, win the game. And so that's the approach that I was, you know, I took for our messaging as well. I was like, guys, listen, guys and women, sorry, I'm trying to say guys, and I say guys and girls and women, and I try to like make sure I say everything. I say, hey, team, I've been trying to say team more. Team is probably the best way to do it these days. And I think team is more inclusive, but say, hey, team, you know, you all are going to be going up against people that have either, they think they have the better product and we think we have the better product more, but it doesn't matter. The reality is you need to make sure you're conveying that our company, our outcomes that we're helping the customer do is, it will be that you is the best partner for them going forward. And the other thing I said too, was that you never, ever, ever make Key Factor, the company, the hero of the story. You always make sure the customer is always the hero of the story. And all those outcomes that you give to our customer as Key Factor, it's not really us giving them. It's they achieve these things. And oh, by the way, yeah, we have a platform that helps them achieve that, but we're the guide, we're the mentor. We're not the person that says, hey, you want these business outcomes? Go with Key Factor and there you go. You're going to get them right now. Like the customer actualizes and realizes these outcomes because they buy into, yeah, I need to get to that point, that new bliss, right? And I realize that Key Factor is the guy that's going to help me versus saying, look how cool Key Factor is. Because nobody cares. Nobody cares about how cool your product is. Nobody cares about how cool your company is. And that's coming from a product marketer, right? That's what I do.
Because at the end of the day, it's the essence of your product, right? Providing peace of mind, right? And yeah. Security. And that security is peace of mind. That's one angle, of course. But you know, security is different things to different people. Is that what you're finding at the moment?
Well, yeah. I mean, especially in our space, I mean, and again, I came from app development space, right? I came from DevOps and continuous testing and CI/CD and all this stuff. Right. And so security was actually a new space for me. And security is also like huge. Like, I mean, the amount of security vendors out there is ginormous. So what's interesting in our space, at least, is we can actually carve out an area and say, hey, this area over here, which I'll talk about in a minute, but this area over here, we specialize in, and it's actually an up and coming area. So Key Factor is the leader in PKI as a service and crypto agility solutions. And the category that we're in is really a new category by Gartner. It was just recognized this past summer. It's called machine identity management. And so the way I explain this is that, you know, you think about passwords and you think about usernames, those things like that, you know, those all have companies like Okta and some other companies out there that manage all that stuff, right? That control the access to that and everything like that. Well, the reality is, if you look at all the machines out there, like a laptop or a server or a database or, you know, all these things that are out there, a website, what are some other ones? Are virtual machines and containers and, you know, Docker and Kubernetes, all these things that are out there, these are all machines and they all have identities associated with them. And so we secure those identities through cryptography. And cryptography, you know, that's basically what makes why cryptography is so critical for the enterprise. And traditionally, the way cryptography has been used in the past has been through PKI, which is public key infrastructure. And so we offer a PKI as a service where you can basically offload all that stuff to us to manage all that stuff for you. But you also control your PKI at the same time. And we also have certificate lifecycle automation, which helps you manage the lifecycle of all of these identities. So you make sure that nothing expires to where, oh no, we had a certificate that expired on one of our web servers or internal servers, and we had an outage that basically took down the entire company for a few days, right? I mean, those are huge things that happen, and those happen in the news all the time. You'll hear all about certificate outages and breaches that happen because these identities aren't kept under check. But it's a new up and coming category because people are starting to recognize, oh gosh, like, I have way more machine identities than I do human identities in my organization, right? I mean, you and I, it's Ryan and Michael and Carl, right? I mean, that's it, right? I mean, there's three, but you could have how many laptops and how many devices, and if you're in DevOps, how many containers and stuff are you spinning up and spinning down? All those things have identities and they need to be secure, and that's what we do.
So it's obviously a huge challenge. And I mean, one of the big things, Ryan, as well, is like you said, people moving towards containers and those sort of things as well. So what's really interesting to me, though, is the as a service aspect of it. You know, a lot of the time security is internalized and IT departments are either too small to have that internalized. So they might hire a consultant to come and do a bit of work, but there's not really a lot of as a service thing. So KeyFax is kind of breaking the mold a bit here, aren't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, back in 2014, we actually pioneered PKI as a service. And the way we did it was because our founders, they were building, it was actually from a consulting company, and they were building some of the most advanced PKIs in the world. So you go into organizations that are, we can't name the names, but you go into these high profile organizations, right? Or government agencies, and their PKI is outdated. It's basically, we know it's being used to control these certificates and control these identities, but it's not well kept, and they're not keeping up with the latest algorithms. And oh, by the way, the PKI admin guy, he's gone. He left. And now it's these guys over here are now being told they need to run PKI. And they're like, what is PKI? I don't know what I'm doing. Like, so it's this lack of expertise that we saw in the space when we were consulting. So what if we did an actual service? And so we're in 2014, we're the first company to offer PKI as a service, but then also we rolled in two things, which is one is the PKI infrastructure side, right? So that's all the stuff that we do with a private tenant and Azure, and we have the people side that controls your offline route. I'm getting a little like specific about what we do, but that's all the people and infrastructure side, right? But then there's also part, which is the software side, which is, okay, great, this is all set up and working, but we need a mechanism to control all the certificates that are out there and manage the lifecycle of those. So we have certificate lifecycle automation that's included in that. And so most of the time people kind of say, hey, oh, we can do PKI now, but you have to basically get your own solution for certificate management or certificate lifecycle automation. We have a built-in solution for that. And the other ones as well is if people hear about PKI as a service, a lot of times, a lot of vendors that are not KeyFactors, what they'll do is they'll basically say, oh, well, we have a partner that does PKI as a service and you can buy our certificate lifecycle automation tool or management tool, right? But now you have two different contracts with two different people and it's not an all-in-one solution. And so we've actually seen, based off of, as we're disrupting the space, what was interesting was when I came on board, in March of last year, we started to rank higher for all these different terms that are out there because I put a lot of focus on SEO. And oh, lo and behold, we started to see our competitors start saying, oh, they offer PKI as a service now. Like, oh, you do that now? That's interesting because we've been saying we've been doing it for the past 5 years. But oh, you guys do it now? Oh, okay, of course you do, right? And so, but it's not the same thing the way we do it. And that's the cool thing about product marketing is we get to talk to sales about how ours is the leader in that category, and why customers need to look at a partner like us instead.
Well, I really like your poker analogy because I think you're right. When you're in a competitive selling situation, a lot of the time it is not always bluffing, right? But you're playing that scenario that a lot of the time you don't have full visibility, right? You can't see the remaining cards. It's all behind the scenes. So that's where I guess you guys really have to give the salespeople that ammunition to help them get to that next step on the table, right, and knock another competitor off.
Oh yeah, and I love competitive analysis. Like if you don't like competitive analysis, and you're in product marketing, you've got the wrong position, because it's number one, it's fun, because it's basically trying to do investigative work or doing investigative work so to prepare the sales team to win, and the sales team wants to win. Also, that's all they care about. Like, all the time sales, there's really good sales reps out there. There's really bad sales reps out there. I always default to, if when in doubt, if I'm getting annoyed with the sales rep, which everybody does at time to time, I try to take a mindset of what are they trying to do? They're trying to win. So if I can help them win, then at the end of the day, if they are not being the best, you know, partner in the deal or whatever, I don't care, because I'm just trying to make sure they win. And they may not be asking it the right way. They may have this last minute thing, whatever, but I want to help the team win. And when it comes to competitive analysis, that's what you're doing. Like, you're trying to make them, you're giving them the playbook, like basically the war strategy playbook. And, you know, this is based off of all the research, all the people we've talked to, all this analysis we've done, whatever. This is our best foot forward. However, like you're saying, Carl, the reality is this is our best bet, right? We don't know every single thing. They could have come out, the competitor could have said, tomorrow we're dropping our price, or we came out with this new feature, we haven't released it yet, but whatever, right? Well, how do you talk through those situations? How do you bring up the fact that, well, that's great, but they haven't had a release in like 3 or 6 months? Do you really have confidence that they're going to come out with that in the next? So it's all these like continuous things that you need to do in competitive analysis. That's not just a feature list of side by side. It's no, hit these main themes of why Key Factor is better than the competition, right? That's your go-to, right? And then all the other, you know, feature compare stuff, whatever, that's down the line. That you don't lead with that. You lead with, these are the 4 or 5 themes of why we're a better solution than this other competitor. And it's more back to the business outcome stuff, Michael. It's more back to that stuff versus the, oh, we have this one little widget over here, this widget over here. Cause again, they don't care about your product. They care about, are you the better solution than this, right? That's all they really care about.
Absolutely. And I mean, obviously we've seen the Atlanta Braves, you know, cap behind you. So we know you're a sports fan, but I mean, I think myself and Michael playing rugby for a lot of years together, and, you know, yourself being a sports fan, it is that essence, right? It's a team sport. You're out there to win. You're not there to play second. And I think a lot of people kind of forget that it is a competitive environment, and they don't use tools like that competitive analysis, where you can sort of probe and look for weaknesses or failures that they can deliver and treat it that way. Do you find sometimes that you run into those people that don't have that mentality, that sort of killer instinct as well?
Well, I mean, if they don't, then, I mean, especially in sales, like if you don't have that, I mean, you're not going to do well in sales either. I mean, I guess like the killer instinct too is it's something that you can't really teach, right? Like you can't, like one of my daughters is like super competitive. The other one isn't. I can't teach the other one to be competitive, right? I just can't. I can't do it. And that's not a bad thing. Like, that's okay. Like, it's not a big deal. Like and she's going to be super talented in other areas that my other daughter isn't either. You know, I have a lot of blind spots being a competitive person as well. You know, that kind of come up, but yeah, I mean, you can't really teach that. I think that the thing I struggle with a lot, or not struggle with, but I continually coach the sales team on, is to get out of the weeds a lot, because one of the things is like, they're like, oh, all I need is this. All I need is this row comparison. All I need is, I'm like, you don't need that. Trust me. You need to get the person to think differently. You need to get into their thought process and say, you actually don't need this line by line comparison. You know why? Because usually line by line comparisons of things, if you score a 4.8 and they score 4.8 and you score a 4.7, well, that doesn't mean that they're better. That just means that they scored higher on whatever arbitrary system they had to put it all together. So you need to be putting your foot forward and say, these things are over here, have way more weight associated to them than the things. Not all the things are created equal, right? So you need to continually coach them to do that too, which again, they just want a quick win. They want a quick, oh, give me the compare, right? But it's not the best way to solve those situations most of the time.
It's and based on that, do you look? I come from a school, and Carl also from our careers is planning. We put a lot into planning when we're in corporate and work, doing our jobs and so forth. What's your take on that when it comes to deals? Like, do you put a lot more into planning than you do into the execution, or what's your thoughts, or is it just think on your feet?
I mean, it's a mixture, right? I mean, our sales team is really, really awesome at having very structured processes in place so that we're not getting to an oh gotcha moment, right? I mean, I'm sure you all do that as well, where you're basically needing to make sure that, I mean, anytime there's a pipeline meeting, right, you want to have confidence that when you say, oh yeah, this is a 90%, that it really is 90%, and you're not just saying that, and it's really a 30%, you know, projectile of what you're doing, right? So that all that goes into planning and execution. But I mean, we have an amazing sales ops team over here at Key Factor, run by Ellen Kinley, and she has so much due diligence and process in place to make sure the sales reps are getting all the information that they can during a deal, so these oh gotcha moments don't pop up, right? I mean, obviously, you know, you can't predict things like somebody gets acquired or somebody loses their job or something like that, where it totally disrupts and shuts down any type of procurement moving forward or something like that. But there's always these things in place that you need to make sure that you're getting in the sales cycle to make sure that confidence keeps going up and up and up and up. And she's got so many great projections on things of, like, you know, more and more data leads to, you know, shorter sales cycles. It leads to better, you know, wind qualification, more wind opportunity, all these things, right? And it's all about getting the data and getting it in to make sure that you're hitting each stage and you're getting the data when you want to, so that you don't have these oh gotcha moments. So it's kind of like this continuous planning as well. It's not like this, you know, it's not the waterfall approach where you have this huge plan and then you go and then it's, you know, you have to keep adjusting.
And look, obviously, with your experience, you've been involved from a startup perspective with some of the organizations you've worked with in the past. We do have a lot of people come on the program in startup mode, trying to find funding and stuff like that, or just trying to get revenue moving. Like, from your experience, because obviously you've grown to a very enterprise level with a lot of your companies, what do you recommend for startups? What's the best thing they should focus on from the start?
Well, I mean, the number one thing, and this sounds so cliche and kind of lame, but it's true. It is true, is that you need to make sure that the team that you create in a startup is the best team you can possibly get. And that means, like, interviewing multiple times, putting people through multiple people, like, constantly. I'm giving you an example, like QA Symphony, right? I joined when I was 10 or the 10th person hired there. And we scaled to, it was like 120, I think, went from, you know, basically, you know, under a million ARR to 25 million ARR in like 4 years. Insane growth that we had. But our CEO at the time, Dave Kyle, I mean, he interviewed me like 3 times for the job. And I was like, why are you interviewing me three? It was like, but he told me, this is always stuck in my head. He's like, you can't get this wrong. He goes, you can't get this wrong. If you get this wrong, if you get these hires wrong initially, it blows up any momentum you have. And I've experienced that on the flip side, where we've hired somebody and we've had to let them go within, you know, 6 months. And we're like, man, like, now there's a huge hole now. We have to it's not good. I mean, that is the number one thing you need to do. The second thing is that, and my buddy Reed Gusmus, you know, told me this, and this was a big thing that he's over at Demand Gen, VP of marketing over at Prophecy, data management company. But he and I worked together at QA Symphony. One of the things he said was, because I was like struggling at one point to figure out like what to focus on. He was like, focus on what's going to generate revenue. And that sounds like a simple thing, right? Like, we got to like get revenue. But what he was trying to say was, you're going to have tons of competing things. Like, this person over here wants you to help with this webinar, this person over here wants you to help with presentation, this messaging thing over here, there's an event. It's like, focus on the things that are going to generate revenue. And that actually helps you focus. It really does realign and go, none of this stuff over here that I'm wasting my time on is helping the business grow. And so I need to like laser focus on that. Example for me, when I came to Key Factor was, you know, it's interesting too, is like, there's all different stages of startups, you know, from very, very beginning where There's no, there's nothing, right? Whereas for me, I've actually joined QA Symphony when it was like around 10 people, which was still, again, revenue was not anywhere close to what it was when we merged with Tricentis. But it had good leadership and it had a good solid team of 10 people. Like that was good, right? Fast forward to and had an amazing kind of product and all that and marketing, and it was all great, right? Scaled that really fast from the digital side. When I get a key factor, a lot of the stuff that they did, they were still like doing amazing with their growth, and we still are. We hit all of our numbers last year. You know, we're expanding. It's great. Got a lot of good news coming out in 2021. But when I got here, what I noticed was a lot of their marketing generation was focused on events and what happened last year, right? COVID hit, and it was like events went right out the window. And so what was cool was I got to take all the knowledge I had from Tricentis, which was webinar programs and website build outs and SEO. And we scaled our SEO. And the time from March all the way to December of this year, we increased our organic rankings by 200%. So, I mean, and that instantly related to more web inquiries, more people coming to the website, more domain authority, all that, right? So what's cool is at each different startup you go to, there's always low-hanging fruit that you can grab onto and just take it and run with it, make it your own, and take off. And that's what I always tell people, which is like, always look for the low hanging revenue generated fruit that you can go after and just focus on that. And that means telling your leadership maybe that, hey, I know you guys have been doing it this way, but trust me, like just trust me for a few months here, we're going to see this return and go that route.
Fantastic, Ron. Well, look, I want to thank you very much on behalf of myself and Michael for coming on board. I think it's been really, really entertaining, and not only just that, but really insightful as well to get into the mind of someone who, you know, does this on a daily basis and, you know, definitely helps out myself and Michael in many degrees as well. So thank you for taking the time to come on board. I think we'll definitely have to get you back on for a bit of a further discussion. I think especially around the poker analogy, I think that's something we can dive into. I'm kind of like, you know, that difference between winning and losing a deer really can come down to, you know, having a whole team behind you or trying to engage and go by yourself and solo as well.
Yeah. No, I can talk to it for days. So anytime you want to have me on, I'm happy to join.
Oh, look, today's discussion was outstanding. Like I've learned so much in the last 45 minutes. It's been fantastic. But mate, thanks for coming on, mate. And we'll get you on again for a round table with some other people to give them some advice. Yeah. Maybe I reckon I think they need it here in Australia. We talk to, so definitely have you on, my friend. Thank you very much.
Love it. Thanks, guys.